WNYC is supported by the World Class Learning Academy, an international private school dedicated to instilling in children the skills and knowledge to succeed. Located in the East Village, applications for 2 to 10-year-olds are being accepted for September. More info at wclacademy.org.
Hi, this is Leonard Lopate. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes. Victoria Woodhull was a pioneering stockbroker, newspaper publisher, suffragist, spiritualist, free love advocate, and in 1872, she became the first woman to run for president of the United States. Composer Victoria Bond joins us now. She's written an opera about Woodhull called Mrs. President, which will preview at Symphony Space on July 9th. I'm pleased to welcome her to today's program for the next installment on our series on overlooked, underappreciated, and just plain interesting women in U.S. history. Welcome to our show, and you share a first name with your subject here.
I know, it's Victoria's Victoria.
She lived at a time when women had few rights to speak of. Would you call her a self-made woman?
Absolutely. She was born into a real poverty. She had 3 years of education, formal education, and was really self-educated and really rose to an extraordinary height from where she started. So yes, I would say she was very much a self-made person.
And some of the things we associate with her sound more 1970s than 1870s.
And even 2012, because there are things such as a woman's right to her body, which I'm afraid we are still fighting those battles. So she was very, very far ahead of her time. It was not just women's right to vote, which, incidentally, she spoke to Congress saying that the 14th and the 15th Amendment already gave citizens a right to vote, and the Constitution did not differentiate between the gender of a citizen. She said, I'm a citizen, therefore I already have the right to vote. And they had to ponder that one for a while and made it, of course, a state-by-state decision.
But she had to explain why she could run for president also, because the Constitution doesn't explicitly say that a woman could be president.
That's right. That's right. And it also, she was actually 35, so she was a little bit too young. I mean, if one goes by the legalities of it. But she, I never think that she had the thought that she was going to be elected. This was just a way to get her ideas out into the public.
If she were alive today, do you think she would be affiliated with one of the parties?
That's a very interesting question, because I think as somebody who is such an independent thinker, she might actually form her own party, as she did at this time, which was the Equal Rights Party.
She grew up in Ohio. Was it a hotbed of radicalism at the time?
No. I mean, she grew up into what we would probably call poor white trash. Her father was probably a snake oil salesman, somebody who went from shiftless job to shiftless job. And she had the ability to – she was – I guess we would call her a clairvoyant. She had the ability to tell people things about themselves that they found to be true. And so he would sort of trot her around from place to place as a child medium. And this, of course, was the age of spirituality, when people were communing with the dead. And so that was what she did. She escaped this background at the ripe old age of 15, got married to Canning Woodhull, a doctor, thinking that she would escape this miserable life, only to find out that he was an alcoholic and a womanizer. And so her early life was actually quite miserable, and I think that is what gave her the compassion and the understanding for a woman's bondage in what was considered the only position that she could be in, which was married, whether it was to somebody that she loved or, in the case of her husband, somebody to whom she was beholden unwillingly after a while.
Didn't she also present herself as a magnetic healer?
Yes, that had to do with her background and her childhood.
But she also claimed to have experienced visions. Do you think that was real?
You know, I do. After reading a lot of her speeches, I think that that she really did believe this, and she felt that the spirit of Demosthenes, of all people, was the one who appeared to her and told her to go to New York and meet Cornelius Vanderbilt, which, of course, she did. I mean, it's so incredible, because Vanderbilt consulted spiritualists in making his decisions on financial decisions, which is not, you know, totally out of the realm of normal when we think of people like Nancy Reagan making decisions after consulting what we would not consider scientific people.
And he bankrolled her later. We'll get to that in a moment. She was also an advocate of free love. Now, there were other people who talked about free love. There were even communes that promoted free love at the time. But where did she come up with all of these
things? Free love, I think, needs a qualifier in this case, because women did not have the right to their children if they divorced. They did not have the right to their property. They were basically a pariah in society. And so free love for her meant when you fall out of love with somebody, you should have the freedom to dissolve that relationship, that no legal form should force you to be in a relationship. So the freedom to love and to fall out of love was really what she meant. It was not kind of a 1960s love-in.
But she also, I guess, was really just speaking out against the double standards.
Exactly,
men
right.
And women. How many marriages did she
Three.
Wind up having? The first one when she was very young, she got out of that how soon?
I think 2 or 3 years. Then she married a Colonel Blood, James Blood, who was a very much an intellectual and a free thinker, and I think helped her a lot in evolving some of her theories.
But she kept the Woodhull name.
She did.
It's a nice name.
Not only did she keep the Woodhull name, but she supported Canning Woodhull and her crazy family. She lived here in New York. This is a New York story. And she had a big house. She was able to finance that because of her success on Wall Street. And her whole family moved in, including her ex-husband, which, incidentally, was one of the things that they accused her of. Well, you live with two husbands. But he was really not able to take care of himself, so she basically helped him out. And then the third husband was a banker in England. My opera ends with her in jail. She spent election night in jail, which is a good ending for an opera. But it has a happy ending in that she, after everybody abandoned her, including her husband and her close friends, she picked herself up and went to England, met a wealthy banker, lived in a baronial mansion, was one of the first women to drive a motor car. And I believe she died in 1927, something like that. So it has a happy ending, but that's not particularly good for opera.
The opera we're talking about is Victoria Bond's opera, Mrs. President, which we'll preview at the Symphony Space on July 9th, about Victoria Woodhull, the subject of our look at some of the really interesting women in the history of the United States. You said it's really a New York story. So why did you come here rather than Chicago?
Demosthenes told her to come to New York and meet Cornelius Vanderbilt. And so this, you know, you'd asked a minute ago about did she believe these spirit voices? And I think like Joan of Arc, she really did.
And Vanderbilt helped her get a seat on the New York Stock Exchange?
A brokerage firm on the New York Stock Exchange, yes. She and her sister, Tennessee Claflin.
She believed that putting women on Wall Street was important, and the New York Herald called her and her sister bewitching brokers.
Exactly. I think the press kind of made fun of them. They were amusing. They made good copy. But by the way, they did very well financially, which I think everyone was surprised.
Well, Hetty Green, who was a big success on Wall Street, was called the Witch of Wall Street. So I guess any woman who made some money on Wall Street was called a witch of one sort or another.
And you know, it was one of the areas that were really closed to women, anything having to do with money.
She also got involved in newspaper publishing.
Yes. And published was the first paper in America to publish the Communist Manifesto.
What was the name of the paper?
Woodhull and Claflin's Weekly.
She had a relationship of sorts with Henry Ward Beecher. Why did they become enemies?
This is the crux of my opera. It really takes place within the year 1872, which was the year that she ran for president. Henry Ward Beecher is a very fascinating person. He was extremely liberal. He was for abolition. He was for women's rights. His sister, Harriet Beecher Stowe, of course, is well known for Uncle Tom's Cabin. And
A famous minister in Brooklyn.
Exactly. Plymouth Church in Brooklyn still stands today, and there's a picture of him and Pinky, who was a young mulatto girl that he bought her freedom. So when we first meet him in the opera, he's a good guy. Now, the thing about Henry Ward Beecher was that he was having affairs with his female parishioners, one in particular, Elizabeth Tilton. Her husband was his amanuensis, basically wrote down all of his sermons and really was his right-hand man, and he had married the two of them. And because her husband was away a lot, Elizabeth Tilton came to spend a lot of time with Beecher, and this developed into a romance on his part, and it became, as it were, the trial of the century when Victoria Woodhull exposed it in her newspaper.
Well, why did she feel it was important to publish the details of his affairs?
Glad you asked. She wanted Beecher to help her support her campaign, because even though he spoke family values, he really was a free lover. And so she wanted him to come out of the closet and admit that and support her campaign. And I think, at least in our opera, which is not a biopic, you know, it's not necessarily historically true because we don't know these things for sure. So in the beginning, he realizes that if she exposes him, she basically blackmails him and says, if you don't support my campaign, I will expose you in my newspaper. So at first he is willing to do that, and then on further reflection, he realizes this will absolutely be the ruin of his career as a preacher. So he turns on her and actually has one of his cohorts ask that the newspaper be mailed to him. And so she is arrested for sending obscenity, and the obscenity being exposing Henry Ward Beecher, sending obscenity through the mail. And so this is why she was jailed. She was actually jailed 8 times in a matter of, I think, 6 months.
So in telling his story, she winds up being a pornographer.
Exactly.
Well, she couldn't have been all that popular with the politicians of the city. She also went after Boss Tweed,
exactly,
which probably made her a bit more vulnerable.
Exactly. You know, in the beginning, she was sort of, a rarity. But then when she started turning dangerous, then in Hearst's paper, there was a cartoon. Nast did a cartoon of her calling her Mrs. Satan, which incidentally was originally the title of my opera until Hillary started running, and I didn't want to cast aspersions on her bid for the presidency, so we changed the title to Mrs. President.
So Thomas Nast, who we normally think of as a kind of a heroic figure, could also be somebody...
Nasty.
But you get the feeling Victoria Woodhull got enjoyment out of shocking the Victorian conventions.
Absolutely. She was very bold, and I think that therein lies so much of her strength, that the fact that she was not raised in a proper environment gave her the kind of strength that I think a ladylike young woman would probably blush to do.
So what was her platform, and did she actually get on any ballots?
The Equal Party ballot.
Frederick Douglass was her running mate,
exactly. And I think, you know, when you think 1872, to have a woman and an African-American on the ticket, that was certainly a bit ahead of the time.
How did it all end? After your opera, of course.
Well, it ends in
jail.
Well,
she didn't win the election, obviously.
And of course, women didn't get the vote until, 1920. So no one voted for her. But as I say, I don't think that realistically she thought she was actually going to be have a serious run.
But did she have male followers?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, she did. And her platform, you know, in addition to suffrage and to free love, it involved the 8-hour workday, civil rights, all kinds of things that, that we may take for granted now, but certainly were not a part and parcel of life in 1872.
And then she just died a normal... She lived how long?
In 1927. Mm-hmm. So, as I say, the opera ends with her in jail, where she feels that Even though she will not get to where she wanted to, others will take up her cause and carry it further. But in reality, after that jail time, she left America. She went to England. As I say, she married this wealthy banker. She lived in a baronial mansion. It does have a happy ending.
Victoria Bond's opera, Mrs. President, will be previewed at Symphony Space on July 9th. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.